Good evening, and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. Chicagoans add their voices to nationwide protests after an ICE agent fatally shoots a woman in Minneapolis.
A woman attacked them and those surrounding them and attempted to run them over and ram them with her vehicle.
DHS Secretary Kristi Noem blames the shooting victim, Renee Good, labeling her a domestic terrorist. But Minnesota officials and eyewitnesses dispute the claims, as video footage appears to show Good's vehicle turning away from the officer.
An immediate pause in federal funding would have dire consequences for health and safety of millions of Americans.
Illinois joins four other Democratic-led states suing the Trump administration over $10 billion in frozen funding for low-income families.
There were alders who chose to create projections that, quite frankly, just were not tethered to, reality.
Mayor Brandon Johnson says the budget passed over his objections could mean city worker layoffs. Meantime, a city council committee advances the latest attempt to expand the city's curfew powers in an effort to curb large gatherings of teens. People's Gas wants a $200 million rate hike next year. And it's deja vu all over again as the Bears prepare to meet the Packers, this time in a first-round playoff game.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Jeff Buchholz of WBBM News Radio, Sasha Ann Simons of WBEZ, Elvia Malagon of the Chicago Sun-Times, and freelance journalist Brandon Pope. Thank you all for being here. Let's get right to it. About 700 things happened this week, it felt like.
So many stories. All right.
Starting off, Jeff, the White House earlier today, they shared another video clip of that shooting incident from a different angle. They're still saying that the shooting victim was attempting to harm immigration agents, but what have we been hearing from observers and seeing from other videos?
It's pretty much consistent with what we had seen right after the shooting of Renee Good this week, that it appeared that she was not posing a threat to the ICE agents who were there, and that indeed, as you point out in the opening piece, it looked like she was turning away from the officers when they fired into the window of her SUV. Governor Pritzker spoke about this yesterday during a bill signing event in Joliet. He said he had seen a frame-by-frame breakdown of the video, said it was horrifying, and accused the Trump administration of lying about what had happened in Minneapolis, and urged people to watch the video so that they could see what's happening.
Yeah, believe their own eyes, for sure.
Sure.
Sasha, earlier today we heard the first public statement from Renee Good's wife, Becca. She was saying that, her wife radiated kindness. They'd merely stopped that day to try and support neighbors. A very different portrait than what the White House and, many of its allies are painting. Do you think her speaking out could bring down the temperature here at all, or is that sort of hoping for too much?
I think that is the hope, but it might be hoping for too much. There's just been so much rhetoric that's already swirled around this and so much misinformation when there, as Jeff brought up, is clear video evidence of this. And I've seen, I don't know about the rest of you, I've seen different angles. I've seen it slowed down. I've seen it, sort of on rewind. And the angles I've seen do not show anything beyond a legal observer in that situation and someone that was trying to get away.
Yeah. Brandon, Renee Good's actions do not appear to meet the FBI's own definition of domestic terrorism, mm-hmm. but we keep hearing leaders in the administration use that term. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, your guess is as good as mine. I think ultimately, though, this is the first time in my life that I've seen the federal government and the state be so at odds on exactly what they're seeing on video
right.
in this particular case, and the general public. And so seeing any federal agency or police agency jump directly to a conclusion right away off the jump, I don't think any of us really see that. Standard protocol is the standard police talk, right? We're gonna let the investigation play out. Things are preliminary. That's not happening here.
Yeah, and in fact, what's happening, and this is something that struck me, is that Minnesota officials are saying that they're being blocked
right.
from
yes,
any investigation
yes, yeah.
that the feds are taking over. And even during Operation Midway Blitz, or sort of in the depth of Operation Midway Blitz, police here always talked about, we've always had these great partnerships with our federal law enforcement partners. We've always worked together on this kind of thing. And that's not happening here, which is very unusual.
This is also an administration that has never set a tone of collaboration, especially when it comes to Democratic-run cities.
Right.
And Minnesota right now seems to be number one on the president's ire list. You know, might be us next month, right? But that Minnesota's the one right now with the fraud case that's going on
right.
with Governor Walz and now this. And so it's par for the course for this administration. Disheartening as well in a time where emotions are high.
Right.
Usually that's the time for the federal to kind of ease tensions, ease calm. Mm-hmm. Yet they inflame it seems, at every turn.
They did this when we saw the Franklin Park shooting here
right.
in our area, right? This is very reminiscent to how they treated that shooting, right? It was another fatal shooting, and immediately they spun the narrative that it was self-defense.
And the only reason that there was any alternate narrative was because the Franklin Park officer was wearing a body cam,
right.
and that was FOIA'd, and then we all got to look at what happened.
And right, there is another issue. Where are the body cameras mm-hmm. on these federal immigration agents? We're seeing cell phone and video from another agent. Where's the body cam they're wearing? I saw a picture, I think from the AP, of somebody wearing a body cam, but it was covered up by a scarf.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't do any good. So accountability is lacking here. Guidelines are lacking here. Clear protocol is lacking here. And so that this administration wants everyone to trust their word and take their word. They haven't built up the credibility to do so.
Yeah.
And so it creates these situations where anger inflames because there's mistrust here.
Well, and there's, you know, this conflict between, you know, Minnesota local officials, state officials saying,
yeah.
we're being iced out of this investigation. We're not being allowed to participate. You know, it's a tension we've seen all throughout the enhanced enforcement, you know, immigration enforcement sweeps. You know, Elvia, sort of to that point, this week, the Broadview City Council, they approved zoning measures aimed at blocking any additional DHS facilities in their, you know, village, kind of trying to use
yeah.
local laws as best they can to push back on the feds. You know, is this sort of a symbolic gesture? Do you think this might be something where we see other municipalities follow suit and try to zone DHS out?
I think definitely. And we know that DHS is looking at locations where they could expand immigration detention in the area. So I think Broadview did this as kind of a precaution. And also because, as you might remember, at one point, one incident had spilled into a person's yard.
Right.
And so there were some ripple effects that went into the community. So by limiting zoning, they're trying to prevent some of that. And I think some of the residents there are also just trying to kind of stay away from the fray because we know this is going to continue. The Trump administration has certainly said they're not backing down. In fact, they want to send more agents to these cities. So we know at some point it's going to ramp up here. And I think this is kind of a precautionary measure for that.
Yeah, on sort of a local level, just creating, there's been, you know, we see massive disruption in the day-to-day
yes.
lives of folks in Broadview, like can't get to their houses, can't get down this street, can't mm-hmm. get down that street. So you have to think that local leaders are concerned about their constituents just on a very basic level there.
Yeah.
You know, Jeff, last night, Chicago's civilian police oversight body, it held a meeting looking into, you know, the idea of possible cooperation between Chicago police and immigration agents. What did they hear?
They heard a lot of complaints from people who say that in a number of instances, including most recently last month on the North Side, I believe, the Chicago police appeared to be assisting ICE agents, which would, if true, be a violation of the spirit, if not the letter, of the city's welcoming ordinances. We've heard a lot about these kinds of claims dating back to the South Loop last June, when people would show up for what they thought was a routine sort of status hearing, and it turned out they were taken into custody by ICE agents. The city, Mayor Johnson and Police Superintendent Snelling have consistently said that officers are believed to be following the welcoming city ordinances, which prevents assistance with any federal immigration enforcement. However, they have to walk kind of a line, and the superintendent has talked about that, that they also can't interfere with a federal law enforcement or a federal immigration action. And indeed, reporters were asking the mayor about this last month. The suggestion was made that maybe ICE agents are calling 911 and saying, hey, we're being attacked or we're whatever, and then CPD rolls up and ICE agents record it on video and say, hey, look, we're getting help from Chicago police. And the mayor said he was kind of open to the idea that, well, maybe they're being duped into appearing to help out. So,
yeah,
it's quite a quagmire because ultimately police, their job is to protect and serve not just the citizens of Chicago, but anyone that comes and visits Chicago. That includes federal agents.
Sure.
So their job is to protect the protesters, demonstrators, and also those people that are on the other side of it. No matter what your political leanings are, it's just cut and dry what they have to do. So when the welcoming city ordinance is there, where's the line between we're assisting and aiding in these efforts, and I'm actually here to, like, just make sure things don't pop off.
Yeah, the cops are really caught in the middle.
Yeah.
Something I found interesting in that meeting, you brought up how upset folks were, you know, though this commission that was, you know, at the helm here, the CCPSA, though they have the power to set the policy for, you know, the police department, the meeting started off with a strange caveat, right, where they sort of said, you know, don't expect any immediate results.
Right.
To which the crowd chanted, shame.
Right. This is just an airing of the grievances. We're not going to do anything here.
And people
we're just taking notes tonight.
Yeah. People were pretty upset, and you even saw some strong comments from older people that were in the audience that were basically saying, hey, remember, like, you didn't exist, and kind of really calling them to do some kind of action on this. So people were very upset.
Yeah, but I want to go back to something that Jeff brought up, which is an interesting point that, you know, maybe this idea that they're ICE agents, immigration agents, whoever it may be, they're calling 911, getting the CPD to come. They want to have this footage of them assisting them because, you know, we've been talking about this. So much of this is about the videos that they're producing, you know, the content.
The governor and the mayor have talked about this, that a lot of what's happening here, you remember the helicopter raid on the
South
apartment
Shore,
building in South Shore, that they somehow had lots of camera crews on the scene of this incredibly dangerous building shooting video that they could put on social media. It is really all about sort of the optics and making sure that fans of this administration see that they're taking action in Chicago.
There will be a film later this year.
Yeah,
I don't know when, but it's coming out.
We're being pumped, basically.
Yeah, quite possibly. All right, well, among the thousands and thousands of other stories it feels like happened this week, you know, Sasha, the U.S. Bringing to court Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, President Trump saying the U.S. is going to be running that country indefinitely. You were, you know, talking with some folks throughout the week to get their reaction. What kind of concerns have you heard?
Yeah, we talked to Congressman Mike Quigley as well as Congresswoman Robin Kelly. I mean, they were just outraged. The big question here is how is the U.S. going to do that, right? You talk about the U.S. running Venezuela. What does that actually look like? How much of a planning process actually happened here behind the scenes? And we got into conversation about just how reminiscent this was to, you know, think back to 2003, Iraq, and some of the differences there in terms of whether there were discussions. It seems that there was much more planning back in 2003, and this is just kind of, they're kind of winging it. Also, Trump is not on the same page, it seems, as Secretary Rubio, who says, we're going to leave this sort of in the hands of the folks who are taking over from Maduro. Trump's like, no, we're in charge. And so, let's get on the same page. It's just a confusing mess. And is this really about oil?
Right.
Where does the oil stand here?
Well, and to bring it back to 2003, it's almost as though we've swapped weapons of mass destruction for fentanyl. You know,
right.
It's sort of, there are a lot of interesting parallels.
Is this just about dictatorship?
Yeah. We talked today with Senator Dick Durbin, who is on the northwest side of the city in Avondale, and we asked about Venezuela, and he said, look, I've been in a couple of classified security briefings about what's happening in Venezuela. It's about time for the Trump administration to tell the American people what the plan is. Who's going to be in charge? Is the U.S. military going to be involved? Is the U.S. military prepared for a ground war, if possible, in order to maintain control over Venezuela?
And we're getting back to that crisis of credibility that this administration has. Their whole plan with this and everything, it seems, this second term is, trust me, bruh. Just trust me. Like, I got this. Don't worry. Details, it'll all work itself out. Don't worry about that.
Sure.
And when we're talking about Americans' lives, potentially sending troops overseas. Many of us in our generation, we have bad memories of what that time was like, right?
Yeah.
That did a lot of damage to not just families, but society. We don't want to go through that again. Many don't.
Right.
This is a president that ran on America First and not being someone who's going into different countries, and yet
and
here we
claimed
are.
In his first campaign that he was against the war in Iraq.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and it was interesting, too, you know, seeing, you know, some congressional Republicans actually rebuke the president on this, you know, saying that this is not what we'd like to see. I mean, were you surprised at all to see folks in his own party stand up and say that this isn't what we want?
Not at all. I mean, we have heard some of the key points from some of the MAGA folks are that they want to focus on America. They don't want war. So it's not surprising that there's kind of a splinter of, like, what is going on? What is the plan? I was going to add, too, I mean, folks at the Chicago Sun-Times and WBEZ have been speaking to Venezuelans here. I mean, there's a lot of folks that came to Chicago because they fled the regime.
Right.
They fled political persecution. You know, there was a lot of economic problems. And there hasn't really been an answer to what's going to happen to folks who have asylum claims, who had TPS, and what kind of country would they go back to? Because there's still not a clear picture of that either.
I'll bring it back to Congresswoman Kelly. I mean, again, the underlying thought here was that Maduro was not a good guy.
Right.
He was not a good guy. He was not a saint. But there's a way to go about something like this, and this was not the way.
Yeah, that this is, again, to the lack of, apparent lack of planning for what happens next.
And the oil question's still looming because he just met with all these oil executives. The Exxon CEO
not
just came out and said,
committed.
It's uninvestable.
Yeah. All right, well, turning to some local news, Jeff, you know, when Alders passed the most recent budget over the mayor's objections, he said that we could be facing a deficit. What did we hear from him this week about what exactly a deficit could mean?
So, through the entirety so far of Brandon Johnson's term as mayor, he has resisted any conversation about cutting city jobs. Doesn't want to lay off city workers. City workers, city jobs are good middle class jobs, right? The city needs more of those. This week, as he continues to talk about the budget that was approved by Alders over his objection, the budget that he famously did not sign or veto and allowed to take effect without his signature, said, we're bracing, that was his word, for the possibility of mid-year layoffs, which, again, is a word that we've not heard the mayor use before. He and his budget team, which notably will not include CFO Jill Jaworski, who is going to the Navy Pier Foundation.
She wanted to
next
hang
month.
Out with Sasha.
That's right.
Well, and who wouldn't? Honestly.
I'm stealing her. It's me.
And they have continued to say that what everyone is calling the alternate budget, which is sort of a silly name because it's the budget. Right. Is out of balance by about $160 some odd million. I talked to a couple of the Alders who were championing that budget, and one of them, Samantha Nugent from Albany Park, said this is not the first or the second time the mayor's office has brought up doomsday scenarios without any real basis. And another alderman told me that he felt like the mayor and the administration should be held accountable for, and this is his word, undermining the budget that is in effect. The mayor has said, we're going to continue to talk to city council, we're going to look at this every month and see what's going on, and the Alders who were behind this effort to approve the budget said, you know, we sure hope that the mayor and the administration work to help us realize the revenue goals that we had for this budget.
They're unfazed. They plowed ahead anyway. Yeah. He's been beating the drum of mid-year layoffs, and they plowed ahead anyway. They're not buying it, right?
So, and you have to imagine that the prospect of city worker layoffs mid-year, just months ahead of the municipal election, is something everybody would mightily wish to avoid.
Yes.
You would think even him. Yeah.
Just guessing, putting my political analyst hat on for a minute. Well, another piece of city news, Sasha. City Council Committee passed the latest in the series of attempts to expand police curfew powers to try and curb large gatherings of teens. They didn't move ahead on a measure aimed at getting social media sites to try to take down posts promoting those gatherings. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that seem almost like the lower hanging fruit there?
Yeah, absolutely. And so now what we're focused on is Alderman Brian Hopkins' most recent proposal, which is to have police do 4-hour curfews, and they'd be able to give 12 hours advance notice. And so, you know, this, of course, a departure from his snap curfew before that would give, 30 minutes notice at that point. I think the question remains to be seen whether Mayor Johnson would veto something like this, because he's been so adamantly against the way in which if you ask him, he's not against a teen curfew. He's just, against sort of this top-down approach to things.
And the social media part of it is, the issue here is that the social media companies would be fined if they don't take these messages down. And this particular measure was held up in committee over concerns that it could leave the city open to a lawsuit. One alderman, Andre Vasquez from Lincoln Square, said after the committee hearing this week, you know, you don't fine a building if somebody puts a poster on it.
Right. Interesting. All right. Well, Illinois' latest lawsuit against the Trump administration, it's joined with four other states over $10 billion in safety net funding for low-income families and children. The administration, we were just mentioning this with Minnesota, you know, the administration has claimed there is widespread fraud in these programs. Elvia, have we really heard anything to back up those charges here?
We have not, and especially when it comes to Illinois, we haven't heard any evidence of fraud whatsoever. Rather, it seems more politically motivated than anything, but really what's at stake is a lot of parents are, this is adding another layer of uncertainty. Am I going to be able to drop off my child at childcare? A lot of these are working parents, and a lot of these programs are meant to help with childcare, with kids who are at risk, providing them specific programs. But there is a lawsuit that was just filed late last night, and so there is potentially a challenge to that, and we'll kind of wait and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, sticking with you for a minute, we're now more than a week into 2026 without Affordable Health Care Act subsidies in effect. You've been reporting on this issue. How big of a strain, if they're not restored, could that be, for example, on safety net hospitals?
Yeah, that's one of the concerns that a lot of advocates have, because there's an estimate that anywhere from 2 to 4 million people across the country could become uninsured. And so when folks become uninsured, they may not do the preventative measures that, you know, you do, going to get checkups and things like that. So when they do seek out health care, they're going to go to an ER, and there is the worry that that's going to create a problem, because it's going to, you know, how are you going to pay for that ER visit either?
Right.
Someone's going to have to pay for it. And also, this is all happening as there's also going to be changes to Medicaid in the long term. So there's also some funding issues that are of concern, that this is all going to create a strain on the healthcare system.
Yeah, well, and it sounds like there's been some confusion that folks have about
yes.
these Medicaid changes, that they're, you know, already in effect when in fact they're not. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much misinformation that Cook County President Tony Preckwinkle had a press event, because her the Cook County Health System has been getting phone calls from people who think they're either not eligible for Medicaid or think that maybe the program has gone away entirely. So
wow.
they're trying to tell people the program is still here. There are new work requirements, but those won't kick in till next year. And the state and other states are still trying to figure out how those work requirements will be implemented. What exactly they mean.
What does that mean? Yeah.
Yeah, the system that will be created to do that. And people will also have to verify that they're eligible for the program more frequently.
Well,
but for now, people still
yes.
have Medicaid.
Medicaid has been unchanged.
Well, you know, and going back to the ACA subsidies for a minute, Brandon, there's been some movement in Congress on trying to restore those. You've got to imagine that there's bipartisan appeal there, at least for some members of the GOP.
To a degree, absolutely, because some of these members of the GOP are in vulnerable districts, frankly, in the midterms, where
right.
it's kind of purple. And so if they don't, like Susan Collins is a great example. You know, mm-hmm. Susan Collins kind of standing 10 toes down when it comes to it. How the Senate ends up moving on this and, you know, how they handle a Trump veto and all that, we still got to see. But there is more energy there. And a lot of it's coming down to, is Trump reaching a little bit of a lame duck status, where the power he wielded over his GOP members, not as powerful in force when 2028, you're kind of out of here. You know?
Yeah, although, you know, who knows? He'll run for a third term, maybe.
Will he be out of here?
Yeah. All right, Jeff, everybody's favorite, utility rate hikes. People's Gas looking
yes.
for $200 million more next year. What's the justification for that?
The justification is that People's Gas would like to replace more than 1,000 miles of old cast iron pipes that deliver natural gas to people's homes and to businesses. This is sort of the new version of what had been their years-long, years-late, billions of dollars over budget plan to replace all the natural gas, the older natural gas pipes in their system. The Illinois Commerce Commission said, no, stop doing that. Refocus on the stuff that needs immediate attention. That's what People's Gas wants money for. They say it'll cost an extra $10 to $11 on your average residential home heating bill. Consumer advocates say Peoples Gas just got the biggest rate increase in Illinois history. Also, they're trying to make money on this, and they're going to fight this every step of the way.
All right. Well, we're not fighting any of you any steps of the way because you're all fantastic. But we are out of time. So our thanks to Jeff Buchholz, Sasha Ann Simons, Elvia Malagon, and Brandon Pope. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
And that's our show for this Friday night. For the Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. All right, Pope, I know for you that weekend is going to include being parked in front of the Bears-Packers game. What are you watching out for?
Good, better, best. I want to see, I want to see how Caleb Williams handles this playoff pressure. He's still a very young guy. Roma Dunze is back at receiver. It's going to be a fun time against the Packers in the snow. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, all right, should we be worried about Jordan Love coming back? What's that going to look like for us?
I mean, look, Jordan Love's going to be hungry. He's going to be ready. But I feel like the Bears, the motivation there, it's a home playoff game. First one in 8 ages.
Yeah.
A chance to make history here.
And the Packers are going to want to settle a score after knocking Jordan Love out of that game a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm, and sponsor of programming that offers continuing education to fellow legal practitioners in Illinois.